everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we actually had some rain up at the Buckmaster bungalow last night. Things were a little bit wet this morning, which I tailored my watering as such. So
it seems
really
like different parts of the area around Tucson and the city got pretty good rain.
Some places got up to about a third of an inch, which is pretty good. I didn't check my little rain gauge, but I don't think it was very much, but we'll take it.
But of course, the the official reading is in the middle of a desert somewhere.
Of course.
Tucson International didn't get anything.
I think it might be two one-hundredths of an inch. Anyway, it's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio Green Things, your home for thousands of poinsettias. They grew 21,000 this year for the holidays. I've got a couple of mine ready for Thanksgiving. It is Friday, November the 17th, 2023. We are coming to you on 1030 KVOI, the voice for trusted local news and talk. You can also find us on Facebook, and we've got quite a few followers on X, formerly known as Twitter. We'll begin our year 14 in January of the radio show, our 36th year on TV and radio in Tucson, and we have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts on my website, buckmastershow.com. For our phone interviews, we'll be using the phone extensively today. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Friday's Media Partner Day, we shout out to people like Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's actually my co-media host today. Hey, Dylan, with us on the live line, had a little bit of car trouble. We were hoping to have you in studio.
Yeah, I'm playing it safe and not driving on a tire that looks like it might come, shredding into pieces as I cruise along.
Yeah, well, I'm glad.
Get that taken care of. Good thing I noticed before I started driving your way, though.
Yeah, well, good. Safety first, my friend. Green Valley News and the Sahorita Sun, that's Dan Scheer and his crew. Tucson Local Media Group, their portfolio includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. With us on the live line is the Democrat representing Ward Number 6, Steve Kasachek. Councilman Kasachek, how are you today?
Doing pretty good. You know, Dylan, you could have rented a scooter and rode down on one of our scooters, helped the local economy out a little bit.
You guys don't have any scooter stations way out here by my house, though.
Well, hey, you got to move in town.
All right.
I live in the city.
All right, we'll get you a scooter.
All right.
All right.
Before we get started, I want to pitch an event.
Go ahead.
Because I'm not sure you'd be asking about it. You flip on the news right now, and what you see are people bombing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Pick your part of the world. We are holding on Monday night at St. Philip's in the Hills, which is at Campbell and River. And you know where it is, Bill, obviously.
Of course. Father Robert is involved with this. I'm glad you're mentioning it, actually. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, good. So some of us got together and decided how do we demonstrate to the broader community that we can set aside differences in faith beliefs or no faith belief and come together to celebrate the importance of democracy. Free, open, fair, safe elections. Safe underlined, because so many parts of the world, what we take for granted simply doesn't exist. So, Bill, you mentioned Father Robert Hendrickson. He is the pastor at St. Philip's in the Hills. We'll also have Bishop Kikanis, Rabbi Kohan, Imam Hassan Ali. And I will tell you, it was not all that easy getting a rabbi and an imam on the same dais together. There will also be representatives from the Sikh community, from the Buddhist community, from Pascua Yaqui tribe. So it's going to be an interesting event in which we are going to, again, come together and demonstrate that we can get along without pulling guns out and validating the need for safe, secure, free, and fair elections. So it begins at 7 o'clock on Monday evening, the 20th, and the parking is around the back and to the side of the church. I expect it to be a relatively large crowd, and so people should get there ahead of 7 so that we can get started on time.
I think that's I'm glad that's happening, and of course it's a great way to kick off Thanksgiving week, Steve Kasachek, here in our community. All right, I want to ask you about you're going to be getting your impending pay raise. This is quite a bump, isn't it, for you and your council members and for Mayor Romero, who will be my guest on the show Tuesday here in studio. Go ahead.
Yeah, it still there. It will have to go through a recount, not a revote, but a recount. But it's about 300-ish votes ahead right now, it being the pay raise. So recounts don't flip 300 votes. They flip 5 or 10. So, yes, it'll go into effect. The process is we will canvass the election on next Tuesday. Once we canvass the election, that'll make it official. And then because of the closeness of the vote, the city clerk will go to court and petition to do a recount. They will grant the petition because they have to. It's part of our charter, or part of state statute, I mean. And they'll do a recount, and then it'll become official. So the raise will go from $24,000 for council members to $76,600. For the mayor, it'll go from $42,000 to $95,700.
Wow.
That's a pretty substantial jump, and the reason I did not support it was because I thought it was too much at one time. Tell me somebody who's tripled their salary this year, and it's probably going to be a football coach or something.
Yeah.
But it'll go into effect, and so I'm grateful to the voters that they approved it. But the challenge we're going to have, though, is that the budget is what it is. We're going to have, that's another $500,000 into the budget. There are some council members who are working full-time right now. They will have to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to keep doing both jobs or give full-time focus to the council. I would suggest that lots of the community members who supported this, one of the selling points was full-time pay for full-time work. And so there are some council members who will have decisions to make in terms of their full-time jobs.
All right. Let's bring in our co-media host today, Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah, well, you certainly got a lot to dig into, but a couple of quick things to touch on the Prop 413. The reason there's going to be a recount is because the state legislature recently changed the threshold at which recounts take place and lowered it to just 0.5% of the votes. If we still had the old law of 1%, this wouldn't be a recount.
Correct. And so 0.5% is about roughly 430 votes, and we're within 200 or 300. So yes,
right.
You're right.
289 as things stand right now. So if it had been more like 800 votes, that this wouldn't be a thing.
Right. Yeah, but statute is what it is. It's interesting that you mentioned state statute, though, because, and I do not know the answer to this, but it's something that's been kind of bouncing around in my head, is that every time the state legislature has come to us and said they don't like the way we're doing our elections, odd numbers, years, nonpartisan, whatever it winds up being, we always point to our charter and say our charter is our Bible. This is what governs and every single governs how we do our elections. And every single time, the courts have said, yes, the city charter controls. What we did this time with this pay raise is that we decoupled the pay raise from the charter process that previously governed it, and we said we want to tie ourselves to state statute that that identifies what the county board of supervisors are saying. And here's what I don't know is if some of the folks up in the legislature will now come back and say, look, the city just cherry-picked to their benefit a way to avoid having to work through the charter. And so they may come at us again saying, if you're going to, you can't have it both ways. Either the charter controls or it doesn't, and you can't use it when it's to your benefit and not use it when it's not. So. State statute is what we're under now in terms of the pay raises.
Guys, I want to change. Dylan, do you have anything more on this, or can I switch subjects?
A quick amusing thought that had occurred to us: if they, you know, if there were a trifecta in state government, including the governor, of folks who were, you know, not too fond of Tucson and Pima County, they could just target the pay of supervisors of counties of, you know, X range of population and cut it.
Well, there you go. Except
for both the supervisors and the Tucson City Council with one fell swoop.
Yeah, except for the fact that that same state statute affects all assessors, all county supervisors, all state regulated positions. So they'd have to do that to everyone in the state.
Well, they could target it to a certain population level, though. There are a lot of state laws that target a county of X population range.
I think we might meet them on the courthouse steps.
Well, somebody, you know, Mike Rankin's still got to, he's got to earn his paycheck, right?
There you go, yeah.
Gentlemen, pretty good news for Tucson in its battle to clean up the forever chemicals. And Tucson Wells, the feds are going to pour, looks like, $30 million into this. Is that a drop in the bucket, or is this going to do some real good, Steve Kasachek?
Well, let's put that $30 million in perspective. Tucson Water already has over $50 million spent or committed on cleaning up the wells. $30 million is not going to come close to fixing the problem that we have with PFAS in this region. Obviously, $30 million is not chump change. We'll take it. But the reality is, and the federal government knows this, that this is a for the city of Tucson and for Pima County, it's tens of millions of dollars more than that. For the country, it's billions of dollars. And every community in the country that has a military base very likely has a PFAS problem because it's the military who's been using the firefighting foam that's the cause of most of this stuff. And so we'll take the $30 million. There are more millions that are right now being talked about at the federal level, tied to the National Defense Appropriations Bill and some other things. It's nice that it would be nice if Congress could actually pass a budget so some of this money could start flowing. But they keep operating on continuing resolutions. But yeah, so we're happy for the $30 million. We also just signed agreed to sign on to a settlement in the litigation that we filed five or six years ago against 3M and other product manufacturers. 3M was one of the manufacturers that was producing the firefighting foam and other products that contain the PFAS. I can tell you that I'm not satisfied with the level of the settlement, but when we signed on to it, we signed on as a class action with something like 110 other jurisdictions nationwide. And so now what the settlement that 3M offered, which was north of $10 billion, is going to be split between all the litigants. So we'll get a piece of that as well. So we're cobbling together the funding to help pay for some of the remediation. The sad reality, though, is that it's not just paying for a couple of treatment facilities. It's paying for the maintenance and operation of those treatment facilities in the long run. It's paying for replenishing the capacity that we've lost by having to shut down 22 production wells. And so this is not, and it is called a forever chemical just because it doesn't just dilute and go away. You can't just dump more water on it and call it good. The treatment for this is very expensive, and we've learned that through a couple of different applications. The state of Arizona has been helpful. Arizona Department of Environmental Quality has put $5 million into a treatment facility that we're testing out at Randolph Park area, and another $20-something million for treating out by our Tucson International Airport problem. So it's good. $30 million is good. It's not enough. It's not anywhere close to being enough.
Dylan, did you have something
it's
on
really
that?
It's really astounding. It's really astounding how pervasive these chemicals are. There are hundreds of different sorts of them.
The biggest challenge for groundwater contamination is the firefighting foam that's been so often used on military bases, especially. But the PFAS chemicals are in, you know, nonstick cookware and water repellent clothing and carpeting, cosmetics, food wrappers. They've been used in so many products. We're basically surrounded by this stuff.
And that's right. And so, 2 points to that. First of all, the firefighting foam has been the primary culprit, and I don't just speculate on that. We have tested wells out just mm-hmm. north of Davis-Monthan and just north of Tucson International Airport, where the Air National Guard trains. The EPA set a health advisory for PFAS of 70 parts per trillion. They recently dropped it to 5. The levels that we're seeing out by Davis-Monthan are about 1,100 parts per trillion in the wells we've tested.
Wow.
And out by Tucson International, they're over 11,000 parts per trillion. So how did it get there? Because Davis-Monthan has admitted to us that when they were using the firefighting foam in training, they would either dump it down the sewer system or close it into the soil.
Oh.
So, you know, you're not supposed to dump aspirin down the toilet, right?
Oh,
so that's how it got there. The same thing is true over at TIA, where the Air National Guard was doing their testing. And so we know what the source of the primary source of the problem is. I mean, you know, let's get real. The nonstick cookware is you know, that's not a major component of what we're seeing, and we can demonstrate that by where the major plumes of this stuff are, and they're in proximity to where the military has been.
All right, guys, let's pause right here and talk about upcoming Thanksgiving. And I think I already know Steve Kasachek put his pie. He told us what kind of pie he wants on his Thanksgiving table. And let's see if I can remember. Was it cherry or pumpkin?
It was apple.
Ah, okay.
But if there are cherry and pumpkin sitting there, they're not going to go unaddressed.
And Dylan, what about you?
We generally go with kind of an assortment. Pumpkin, certainly. Apple pie, definitely. I generally make a apple cranberry pie as well.
Mm. Well, Mona's Danish Bakery is ready for your pie order. And last year, let's see, they did 600 orders of pies. I wonder how they're doing. I have to ask Steve and the team how they're doing this year, but they were hoping to top 600 pies for Thanksgiving. They're open right now for lunch. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Not only put in your order for your dessert, but they do some really beautiful Thanksgiving dinner rolls, and I will be asking Steve and the team to prepare a couple of dozen dinner rolls for our Buckmaster Bungalow potluck that we'll be having in Ann's honor. Ann always loved Thanksgiving, so we're going to do it. Anyway, we'll pause right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Steve Kasachek, our Friday Focus interview. Dylan Smith, our guest co-host for today's show. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Friday edition of the Buckmaster radio program, which will begin year 14 in January as we jettison year 13 as quickly as possible. Steve Kasachek, Ward 6 Democrat, with us on our live line in our Friday Focus interview. On our other live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dylan Smith, the co-publisher and founder. He's the editor of the TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service. All right, Dylan, why don't you begin the questioning for segment number two?
Something else that amused us over at the Sentinel this week at in city council action was setting the vice mayor position up with some powers. What are those powers, Steve Kasachek?
Well, they haven't been adopted yet, but they likely will be. Some of the council members felt that the vice mayor should, there a few changes should happen. Number one is that right now we just traditionally rotate once a year. Who's next in line is voted in.
Yeah. It's basically been kind of an honorary thing.
Yeah, and so what you do is you preside when the mayor is not over the meetings. When the mayor is not there, if he or she can't go to special events, you stand in, that kind of thing. So that's what it's been. And so the mayor, Rahina and Lane Santa Cruz, were the ones who really were advocating for this, and they wanted to tie some, quotes, duties to it, in their words, to professionalize the job. Some of those duties include being assigned as the representative to things like League of Cities and Towns, that kind of deal. Another that they listed was to make sure that we're all playing well together, that we're all getting along, sort of the liaison between offices. That has its limitations, obviously, because that might be nice if you want to call and say get along with, Cunningham or whatever, but they can't talk policy issues because we still have an open meetings law that governs. And so I took the position of the council meeting that I thought that the rotation was working fine, and that that even though it's ceremonial, our constituents care about it, and each they care about the title, and I think that every ward office ought to have a chime at representing, in that role, in the event that the mayor's gone to preside over the meeting. So the majority decided otherwise, and so we're going to change the function and change the method of choosing them. Yeah, now
is
instead of
make people apply for it?
Right, yeah. And so once a year, you submit a letter of interest to the clerk, and then the council will review the letters of interest and make a vote. And I agree with Kevin Dahl's position on this when he said that you know, I might feel that if Kevin were the vice mayor, I might think he's doing fine. But now it puts me in a position of saying, yeah, but I think I can do a better job. It's my turn. And so we have competing letters of interest. I don't know. I think it's kind of all ado about nothing, frankly. I mean, they really still is a ceremonial position, and being able to Shirley Scott served as the representative to this League of Cities and Towns for a decade, and when she wasn't the vice mayor, we can already pick up the phone and call and make friends with our colleagues. And so I don't see it as being a necessary change. It also wasn't a field worth dying on.
Is that going to be coming up next week, or when is that vote going to be?
Well, we voted to make the change, and now the language of the ordinance will be finalized, and it'll wind up coming through on a consent item at some point soon.
Okay. I want to.
It seems like over the years, some members of the council have taken that title rather more seriously than others, making sure it was on their business cards and insisting on being introduced as the vice mayor and et cetera.
Well, I was going to have it written by one of those planes that flies over stadium and leaves contrails out, but I never got around to that, and then the city manager wouldn't fund it for me, so I said, screw it.
What about the city getting a little tougher on rainwater landscape, using rainwater, landscaping water use, let's put it that way? I understand three new staff members are kind of beefing up that enforcement arm. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, we've had a rainwater harvesting ordinance in effect for over a decade. And oftentimes, probably not just the city of Tucson, but oftentimes jurisdictions put things on the books and they kind of sit there and gather dust. This was one where about a year ago we had a study session and asked for an update, and it was based on a study that a local guy had done, and he really did a deep dive into how the permits are being issued, what kind of oversight is being given into the basins as they are built, or the basins for the passive rainwater harvesting, the maintenance and upkeep on the active harvesting, the cisterns and those things, and found out that we had really good intentions a decade or so ago when this was passed, but there hasn't been any follow-up. And so the word on the street was, even though there's a rainwater harvesting ordinance, no one's going to come and check on you. And so it wasn't being enforced. Therefore, it wasn't being applied on the ground. And so what we have done in the last year-ish is that we have assigned oversight to a particular department. We have also assigned or hired three people to go out and do the do not only the plan check, but also the site, to check the sites to make sure that the systems, both active and passive, are being maintained, they're functional, and they're meeting the metrics that they were intended to meet when they were given a permit to do them. So I think it's good that if we're going to have an ordinance on the books, we might as well be making sure that it's got some teeth to it. And in this case in particular, because I was on a call earlier today with a group who's concerned about stormwater flooding, and these basins are intentionally intended, that's redundant, but they're intended to capture some sheet flow to help with the stormwater problem, but also so that we're not sending some of the small amount of rainwater we get down the street to the Rito, and we can capture it and reuse it on site, whether it be commercial or private. So I think it's good that we made the changes. I think we've got the three people in the saddle now, and the report was that they're making a real difference, and so I'm glad we did that.
Dylan Smith with us from Tucson Sentinel. Go ahead, Dylan.
Well, if we're ever going to hit that 1.3 million mark, we're going to need to have quite a few more around parking lots being fed with rainwater, right?
Yeah, so there is a parking lot on the east side of Elkhorn Center that sits vacant of cars all the time. I would love to see the ownership of Elkhorn to step up and say, you know, we'll work with the city, let the city fund it. I know that we've got plenty of green stormwater infrastructure dollars in each of the ward offices that we could cobble together and put a really nice basin green space in the east side of Elkhorn. And the impact of that would be significant downstream. That's Christmas Wash. It flows right through mm-hmm. Midtown, right through several neighborhoods, and every single time it rains to any degree, they flood. I mean, I used to ride an inner tube down Alvernon when I was a kid, and it's still you can still do that. You can do it on Alvernon, on Treat, on Columbus. You pick your street, north-south arterial. So that's one example of what you're saying where that would make a significant difference. And there are other shopping centers that the same thing would be true. And that also dovetails into the whole conversation of our city codes are overparked. When you put in a commercial development, you've got to have more parking there than you're going to see other than perhaps during rush hour. And so there are things that we can and should do in our codes that would help to take some of the pressure off of businesses to simply lay asphalt and paint lines.
I have one more water question, if that's all right, Bill.
Sure, go ahead.
Steve, can you give us an update on where the clash between the city and the county over water rates stands?
The differential water rates, yep.
Indeed.
Yeah, so differential water rates, Reader's Digest version, is that various jurisdictions around the state charge higher rates per CCF for people who live outside of their city limits than the ones who live inside of it. The city, we passed, I want to say a year and a half ago, a differential rate for county residents. And it was adopted, and then we went through later on and did a cost of service analysis, and the cost of service analysis generally supported the rate that we had in place. The county sued us over the rates, and recently a court determined that not that differential water rates are illegal, because they're not. They exist all over the state. But that the process by which we went through to establish our rates was flawed. The court said correctly that we established the rate, then we did the study to validate the rate. So where we are now is we're in conversations with the county about how do we work together on this. What I would love to see happen is for the city and the county to sit down and participate together in a cost of service analysis, and if it validates the rates, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And we adjust the rates to whatever that cost of service analysis says. And we can co-fund the thing. We can all sit in the same room at the same time and watch the rate study go forward. The other question that's out there, though, is what about the customers who have been paying money for what the courts just determined were illegal rates? There's a nuance to this, in that when the county sued us, they did not sue us on behalf of all the ratepayers. They sued us as the county. And so what we did early on in the suit is that we said, okay, let's change the ordinance, and any county facility is now exempt from the ordinance. So what happened now is that now that the court has made their determination, every other ratepayer in the county could file suit within a statute of limitations and cause us to have to address the amount of money they've been paying. In order to avoid that, we need to be sitting down with the county and working on a solution. And that could be, we'll pay you back to when the court made their determination, or whatever it winds up being, the compromise. But this is everybody loses when the city and the county are fighting and in court against each other. And I think there are ways that we can come to an agreement on this. But the guts of it is let's work together on a cost of service analysis. And if the cost of service says nobody's paying anymore, no matter where you live, then that's fine. Then we don't do it. I think that the rate analysis will validate, though, that there is an extra cost for pumping and getting the water to some of the outlying areas. And by But finally, I would say this, that might also be true for some residents within the city limits. You know, the city has grown. We got a lot of Way East Side residents that we might have to charge a differential rate for based on that analysis if it turns out that they're costing us extra to serve too. So a lot of nuance to it, but I hope that we can work it out and we don't wind up litigating against the county. That would just be the bad. That would be the worst outcome.
What if the county decides to impose a differential sewer rate?
Well, you know what? The county is already, and what really was the genesis of this whole TIF was that the county back in Huckleberry days charged what's called, PAYGO. PAYGO is that the county is charging all residents of the county a higher property tax, and they're earmarking those extra revenues to road repair out in the county, not within the city. So they're kind of already doing that, and that's sort of what got some of our hackles up on the back of our neck, if that's where hackles are, and that sort of was the genesis of this current deal.
All right, Steve, I know you've got another appointment. We're going to have to let you go, and thank you for the time today.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it, and Dylan, we'll get that scooter out to your house soon.
Excellent.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, Steve Kasachek. Sure. All right. We're going to pause right here. Dylan Smith sticks around. I've got a couple of things for Dylan. It's Buckmaster on a Friday in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line has been presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The bump music there, a little bit of America and the Tin Man. All right. Dylan Smith with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Thanks to Steve Kasachek for his time this morning as our Friday Focus interview. Dylan, the big story of the week. Locally in politics, that Sharon Bronson, longtime Pima County Supervisor representing District 3, I think Sharon was first elected in 1997, I believe. Anyway, she'd been on the board, of course, Democrat.
Elected in 96 and took office in 97, correct?
Long time that Sharon has been on the board, and I think I first met her when she was an environmental activist, actually, before she ran for supervisor. But anyway, so now with her resignation, and she broke three ribs, her beloved has a couple of beloved cats. And you know how if you're a cat person like me, oh, they love to see if they can trip you up. Well, one of them was successful. And Sharon took a tumble, and anybody that's had a broken rib, oh my goodness, she's got three. It's very, very painful. Anyway, she is going to resign, and she's not going to stand for re-election next year in 2024. So, Dylan, this presents the Pima County Board of Supervisors with a little bit of a dilemma. Do they appoint a placeholder, someone who will not or who will make it very obvious that person does not want to stand for election in 2024, or do they appoint someone who then becomes kind of the incumbent front runner in 2024? Your thoughts, sir?
Well, it is going to be a big decision for them. It's one they've faced before over the years. Not for this seat. Sharon Bronson's been the longest-serving supervisor in Pima County history. She's been around for a moment or two.
Yeah.
But you're right that will they? You know, there's a Democratic majority on the board. Will they decide to give someone a bit of a leg up and have them be able to run as an incumbent? There were already two candidates who had Democratic candidates who had submitted paperwork to run in the primary against Sharon Bronson. And they, I would imagine, are going to be likely to apply for the appointment. There are other folks who have said they are interested in being appointed and then running. There are some who are being talked about as potential candidates next year, but who aren't going to throw their name in the hat for the appointment. And one of the wrinkles is that the only Republican on the board, Steve Christie, has pretty much steadfastly refused to vote for any Democrats to be appointed to any of the offices that the supervisors have been responsible for filling in his time. And state law requires that this seat be filled by someone who is of the same political party as the person who was elected, so that the voters' choices are still somewhat represented. So is he going to play a role? Is he going to continue to vote no and basically sit out having a choice? And there could be a whole lot of jockeying, even though there are, the four Democrats who are the majority. Are they going to all agree on someone? And actually, well, there will be three Democrats voting on it, because the person who is resigning doesn't get to vote on their replacement. They can, indicate who they are in favor of, but they don't get to actually vote.
Yeah, there are quite a few candidates. I know Kristen Randall announced on Facebook a day or so ago. She's former constable, works with Justice of the Peace Ray Carroll in Green Valley, has been working on some really innovative programs with Justice of the Peace Carroll, and there'll be a lot. Do you have any other names that you are hearing?
Well, there are the two Democrats who have already filed to run in the primary next year, Catherine Macronis, who's on the Marana School Board, and Jen Allen, who's been a longtime activist, been the executive director of the state ACLU, and worked with other groups. And I think Andres Cano would be someone who would be interested in running next year,
possibly. He's going to school at Harvard right now, so I don't think would be jumping back into local politics quite quickly enough to want to get the appointment.
Yeah, I don't know if Andres would want to give up what he's doing there at Harvard, but that's an interesting. I think there'll be a bunch of them, bunch of candidates, and so again, yeah.
And if there's a tie, you know, it comes down to the clerk being the person who votes for the appointment, which we saw, you know, a number of years back when Ray Carroll became a supervisor. He was appointed before he began his long run of being elected, and it was the clerk of the board who had to break a tie.
That's right. That's right. I remember that. That's a long time ago. Anything you want to quickly bring up, Dylan, before we let you go about the Sentinel?
Well, you know, it is that time of year again at which we are doing a considerable amount of raising funds for the Tucson Sentinel, which, as you know, is a nonprofit. We're Tucson's nonprofit, independent local news source. And right now, through the end of the year, folks who help us out with their investments in hard-hitting local reporting can have that money matched 2-to-1. You can triple your support for real local news in Tucson if you give to the Sentinel over the next few weeks. And there's a program called News Match, and we have some very generous local contributors who are also have given to our Community Challenge Fund. So if you really want to see solid local reporting, people digging into that desert dirt and finding out things that other people don't want you to know, you can go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog and help us out a little bit. We very much appreciate it.
Okay, Dylan, thank you very much. And glad you didn't try to come in on that very, very difficult balding tire that you have on your automobile. So stay safe.
You got to contribute to the Sentinel's new tire fund, eh?
The new tire fund. All right.
Thanks,
Dylan. Okay, that will bring us to Weekend Watch Time with Matt Russell. That is what's coming up next on the Buckmaster Friday edition. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. And it is time for the weekend. Stir it up, baby, as they say. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Our friends over there waiting with welcoming arms for all of our Tucson friends who, many of them, have never even been over there. But the folks that do go always have a great time. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Just a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Tons of activities. Look at that temperature. Can't beat it. 68 midday in Silver City. Perfect hiking weather. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Here is the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist Matt Russell, who's getting ready for the holidays. It's Thanksgiving now, just a few days away. Hello, Matt.
Hey, 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 stirring it up, baby, as instructed. It's Friday.
it's harvest festival time of year, isn't it?
It sure is. You know, Bill, I love our vibrant farmers market community right here in town. And there's an event on Sunday that'll demonstrate one big reason why. It's the second annual Harvest Fest from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Rialto Park Farmers Market, of course, over there at the Rialto Racetrack. This is going to be a celebration of local farmers and growers. You're going to enjoy educational presentations from local farmers, seasonal produce. There's going to be live music, more than 90 food vendors on site,
wow,
a live chef demonstration with samples. This event is brought to us by Heirloom Farmers Market, which I think is a must for all Weekend Watchers, and it is on Sunday morning from 9 to 1.
And if I know Matt Russell, he'll be going over to that event on an empty stomach and doing some sampling a little bit here and a little bit there. This time of year, we always have our chili cook-offs as well in town.
Yeah, speaking of sampling, here's another event I'm going to go to with an empty stomach. You can't celebrate fall without a steaming bowl of chili. So my fellow chili heads will rejoice in the return of the annual chili cook-off at Button Brew House tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6. So there's going to be a judge's choice winner and a people's choice winner honored from among the 8 participants. And the people's choice will be determined by the total number of votes counted from attendees. So this is one campaign where one vote can definitely make a difference. Tickets are $30, which includes access to the event, live music, and a sample of each chili entered. So I say, may the best chili win. The spicier, the better, of course.
Of course, cranberry is very much associated with the big day, Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. Anything in that category for our weekend watchers?
You bet. You know, our friends over at Monsoon Mystics Apothecary on West St. Mary's Road, they're giving us all the opportunity to get a leg up on the big day with a cranberry workshop on Sunday night from 5:30 to 7. So Chef Tori is going to cover all the basics along with a history of cranberry sauce and its origins. And then you'll make 2 8-ounce cans of cranberry sauce just in time for the big day next week. You're also going to learn some canning basics, which is always a great skill, I think, to add to your kitchen arsenal. You can go to monsoonmystics.com for all the details.
That is very cool. You'll have your own homemade cranberry for your Thanksgiving table. Sounds like a real winner. All right. We'll be talking to you in 2 weeks because, of course, Black Friday, we're taking Thursday and Friday off here at the Buckmaster Show. So have a wonderful Thanksgiving, Mr. Matt Russell.
Right back to you and the Buckmaster crew, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much. All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. The original theme music was composed by my friend Christophan, a German who really has a lot of talent. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and everybody here at KVOI, including my longtime Friday engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, the entire team here at Bustos Media Tucson. We all have the same wish for you, a couple of things. Here it is. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. And a lovely Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving weekend.